guys, Helen Douglas from Cisco, CX, and Mia. So, hey, Alistair, you and I are supposed to have a chat now. We're supposed to talk about, you know, what's going on, how we met, and your experiences in CX in your first 2 years. But it'd be weird if I didn't mention lockdown. So how are you finding it? You're looking a bit red and hot in that room there in your garden.
My room is very hot. Since I thought it'd be a great idea to build a garden office and then didn't realise that we were going to have 30 degree heat for a week because I've got no aircon. And if I open the door, it's noisy. So, yeah, I'm finding lockdown. I think it's very manageable now. It was very weird at the start, particularly when all the restaurants and all the bars and the pubs were all closed. But now things are starting to open up again. I actually don't particularly miss that hour and a half drive to the office and in bad traffic. And I'm actually finding I'm much more productive in terms of getting things done. But I do believe that we need to work differently. We can't keep just doing video calls all day long. You go mad. So I'm giving advice to everyone in my team that they need to, yes, do some video calls because it's great technology, but also do some phone calls, go for a walk, take a break. And there's also lots of distractions now because we're all working from home. So you've got dogs, kids, families, neighbours, noise, digging, you know, roadworks, builders. That's just now part of day-to-day life. And I think we just need to get used to the imperfection of perfection. And it's okay, you know, and I'm kind of enjoying it. I think I've met more children from my customers in this past 3 or 4 months than I did in the past 10 to 15 years. You know, and I think it's a really nice way to actually get to know people. As part of lockdown, you can see their rooms, you can see a little bit about them. You know, my room's just a white blank room because I'm in a garden office, but I've also seen some really interesting pictures in people's houses. So, yeah, look, lockdown, it's going to be here for a long time. This is not going to be a quick process. So we just need to get used to it. We need to make the most of it. And, yeah, it may mean that we have red faces for a while, but that's okay.
So what's the most surprising thing you've learned about somebody during lockdown, whether it was the colour of their wall or a kid running in?
I've actually realised just how accessible people are. So before, it would take me ages to get into people's diaries because I'd have to, you know, it would be, oh, no, he's not available, he's travelling, you know, he's not available, she's not available, she's travelling. And actually now it's like, yeah, I can do a call in 2 hours or, yeah, it's just the whole accessibility of people. People just have a lot more time in their diaries because once you take travel out of the way, people start to get, you know, you're opening up 10, 20, 30, 40% more time. So for me, it's just the people are a bit more familiar, they're more relaxed. I find that when people are sat at home, they're just a bit more chilled out. It's just a little bit of an easier conversation. And I find that meetings are shorter. So, I mean, you'd be surprised if, you know, people are saying, let's not do an hour, let's do 20 minutes. And let's just, you know, what is it we're going to crack on with? And I like that. I like the fact that we are no longer having to traipse into a meeting room, set up a computer, you know, sometimes doesn't work, sometimes does work, wait for everyone to get tea and coffee, sit down, etc. Now we're just getting straight into meetings and getting things done a lot better. What's surprising for me has been just how human beings are, which sounds a bit weird, but actually just how normal everybody is. You know, before it was all very hierarchical, you know, very title-based, but now it's just kind of people talking to people, which I like a lot more.
Yeah, so do you feel like it's a lot more authentic conversations?
Authentic, but probably more genuine, more than authentic. I think people you know, you're getting down to brass tacks now. But also what I've noticed is that a lot more, particularly at the start of lockdown, a lot of the conversations were about help, which is what can we do to help you, okay? So, you know, customers are turning to the big partners, you know, the Microsoft, the IBM, Cisco, VMware, you know, the companies who've got scale like we have. We've got 6,000 people in the EMEA team. We've got a lot of people here and we can really help. And that's what the customers realize, that, yeah, okay, there's lots of small, trendy, innovative companies. But actually, when it comes down to it, you need help. You go to your big partners and then they wait to see if you step up. And I think the way that we've treated customers with our partners through lockdown will build brilliant relationships for the future. I think we have stepped up, and we haven't stepped up in a financial way, like we're going to charge you lots of money to help you. We've just done the right thing for that customer. And yeah, okay, fine. Some of it is great for revenue, but actually most of it isn't. But it's the right thing to do to help our customers because they need our help. And I know that when we get through this, when we go back, those customers won't forget that. So the way you make people feel right now is going to be really important for the future.
So we've talked a lot. We've talked about lockdown. We've talked about the relationship with the customers, and it leads to this phrase you always use about CX is a people business. Aren't all teams a people business? Why do you say specifically CX is a people business?
Cisco is a technology company, but technology doesn't work without people explaining it. So, you know, you think about technology, every single product that we produce is slightly more complex, okay? Even though we try to simplify, it actually becomes more complex. So the software is more complex, there's more features, functionality, it does more things, okay? Because that's what people want. They want a better return on their investment. And you need people that really understand that technology and then who can demystify it. So for me, it's about whether it's basically a services team that helping to implement new technology, whether it's a support team helping to support ongoing technology that's in a customer's network or data center or collaboration, or whether it's a team of business development guys who are actually explaining how the technology will work in the future. It's really the people is the glue. People is absolutely glue. But what's interesting is the way that the customers are consuming content is changing. So what I've seen is that although people help customers to make sense of things, customers now do a lot more research online, digital, and what we call digital journeys is becoming much more apparent now. A lot of information now can be consumed digitally. And the digitization, you know, particularly in countries that weren't really that advanced. So you take Saudi Arabia. Everything was done in person. You know, everything had to be done in person. You know, they didn't like, cloud was not really taking off there. In 4 months, everything is now completely digital and virtual, and cloud is going through the roof. So I think that people are understanding they have to work differently, and to use technology properly, you need the people to help you. And that's what's great about Cisco, because we've got really highly skilled people. We spend a lot of money and a lot of time enabling people on these technologies so they actually know how they work. So that when a customer comes asking for help, either at the start of a project, the middle of a project, at the end of a project, or throughout the entire life cycle, we've got people there who understand the customer, they understand what they're trying to do with the technology, and they understand the technology as well. And those three things mean you can help a customer become successful.
So the people that are helping those customers are your people, and you know how hard they work. And especially when we first went into lockdown, you had teams that were going in to help customers and working way over 8 hours a day. What advice do you give to your teams so that they have that proper balance and they don't work those long, long hours?
Also, I'm not really looking at how long someone works in one day, because, you know, there are some days you just do a long day and some days you do a short day. But, you know, what at Cisco, we've given back, you know, as well as the normal holiday days, 25 days a year for UK and whatever it is in each country. We also give days back for other things. So next Friday is a company holiday. We've given them a day off. We also gave people other days off. So I encourage people to take their holiday and actually relax and turn their laptops off and don't do work. But yeah, there are times when it gets intense and you end up working long days. But at the same time, if people work weekends, I encourage them to take time off during the week. I mean, the worst thing you can do is have people that are burnt out, because then they become less productive. And if you've got a team of five great engineers, for example, and they're all working really hard, if one engineer burns out, that means that team has to pick up the workload. And you've got four engineers then who are probably doing the work of five. So actually what you do is you stress the rest of the team. So it's better that one engineer, you know, who's feeling a bit overworked or is feeling that, you know, he needs to relax, just take some time out. Because the worst thing you want is people who are going, you know, either long-term sick or who are not productive. It's down to managers to spot people who are overworking and need a little bit of time off, and to encourage them to just down tools for a bit. And customers understand. Customers definitely understand, and partners understand as well, that we need people to be productive, and people need to just switch off every now and again.
So you're a father of four, you're an SVP of a 6,000 people organisation, you sponsor so many, early in careers, women in tech, Pride, ERO. So how do you get that work-life balance?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I'm kind of ruthless when it comes to certain things. So I don't do any, hardly do any meetings after about 6 p.m. UK time, unless my boss, who's in America, wants to talk. And that's different because she's in American time zone. But I don't, if someone tried to put a meeting in my diary after 6 o'clock, I just say, no, it can wait till tomorrow. I don't respond to email after about 7 o'clock. I do read the email, but if it's obviously something critical, of course I'll jump on it. But I'm not going to sit there all night, you know, watching TV with a laptop on my knee doing email. And honestly, my family time is my family time. You know, it's very precious to me. I've got a five-year-old who does not understand that she can't come in my office and play with me constantly. You know, I've got a nine-year-old that wants to talk about whatever he wants to talk. The older kids are different because they are, you know, 21 and 23. They're much more, you know, much more independent, but they also have their own needs as well. So I think for me, it's really a case of just, you know, deciding about priority. What is really important? What do I actually need to do? I know I get a ton of email, you know, as you imagine, you know, lots and lots of email. A lot of them is just is not necessary. I don't need to reply. I will acknowledge it and definitely read it, but I'm not going to start working all night long because it just isn't productive. And what's happened I've been at Cisco now for just over 2 years is that people now understand how I work. And people don't schedule, particularly my American colleagues, they don't schedule meetings in my diary past 6, 7 p.m. in the evening because they know that it's my time. And they're actually very respectful of that. And I think that Cisco has a very respectful culture, particularly with American teams, about respecting people in EMEA and APAC as well, and not putting stuff in the middle of our night so that we have to get up and miss on what should be our downtime. But yeah, the other thing that's big for me is that I've got certain things that I'm really interested in. So I'm really passionate about early in career because I need to bring hundreds of young people into our organization for the future. So I'm looking at, you know, the graduate intake in the UK of 18, 19-year-olds and thinking where they're going to be in 5 years. Because in 5 years' time, I'll need them to be in a certain place. So it's like a conveyor belt of their career. I'm also very passionate about women in technology because I've seen the power of where you empower women and you think you get the most incredible results. If you look at Saudi Arabia, you look at the teams we've got there, it's about 40% female, 60% male, which is a very good mix for a technology company. And those females in Saudi Arabia are amazing. And the customers tell me how amazing they are. And they just need to be empowered and given that chance. And in Saudi Arabia, women haven't had as many chances as, say, the UK or the US or other Western countries. But now, you know, the women that are coming into the workforce in Saudi and other countries like Saudi Arabia are amazing. And we need to give them a chance to grow their careers. And also diversity. You know, I don't want to walk into a room full of 50-year-old white men. It's boring. You know, it's just there's no interest in that at all. I need to make sure that we're giving all types of people, making diversity, you know, something that is just not driving it as a program, but just making sure that everyone's aware that we need to make sure that we have a complete, you know, view of the world when we look at our organizations. We need to make sure that we're giving chances to everybody. You know, I really like the system that the big consultancies have, consulting groups have, like PwC, Accenture. When they take on their intakes, they basically anonymize their CVs. They take out all the names, all the pictures, and they give everyone a number. And then they decide on who's going to get through to the first and second round of interviews based on psychometric tests online without even knowing who the person is, where the person's come from, you know, what their ethnicity is. And I like that approach, just to be open and to be fair.
So you've been here 2 years. You and I met at Paddington Station just over 2 years ago, just before you started at Cisco. When you look back over the last 2 years, Alistair, what is your proudest moment? And what do you think, I've still got to do more work in that area? So proudest moment and the area where you think I've still got to do some work.
So yesterday we announced our FY20 results. The last night it was our earnings call. Our results were good because of the current environment, but they were tough. You know, it's been a tough year. But I look at my results within that set of results, and I am so proud of what the team achieved in FY20. We had outstanding growth in our EMEA business, and I think that's down to the partnership we have with our sales colleagues. We work as a single team across myself and Wendy and Richard. I also see that we had growth in all our lines of business that were important to us, so we're growing the business in the right direction. So for me, actually, I'm really proud today. I woke up today. I know that the company, you know, had a strong set of results for the current economic climate. But I think that we really perform well, and we perform well in COVID. And I'm so excited about the opportunity for the future, because if we can do those kind of results in what are the most difficult time we've ever had in our lives, imagine what more we can do. Now, I've never felt so proud as I did today. Just look at the results for the EMEA CX team, thinking just well done to those 6,000 amazing individuals who are in that team, who've just really come together and made this business work for our partners and our customers. What's next for me? I think renewals is really working well. I think services is a brilliant organization, really helping customers. Our support teams do great work, absolutely great work. And I think customer success is going to be a big focus for me. I own customer success globally for the company. And I think that we've made some really good progress in terms of hiring and in getting to a methodology and in getting people to understand what the life cycle is. but I don't think we've landed it properly yet. And I think this is the year that we land it. And when I land it, I mean, when your customer success really kicks in and you drive adoption and customers really start to understand and use the technology that they've bought, it's amazing. You get the most incredible results because customers come back and say, actually, I bought the solution from you. I'm now seeing the value even earlier. I want to buy more. I want you to engage more. And it's mainly down to the fact that you've got to have a really rigid process to engage post-sales with people that really understand the customer, the use case, and the technology to make those customers successful so that you can help the customer realize value. I mean, every time anyone buys anything in a technology world, they have some kind of return on investment. You know, why are you spending the money? What are you trying to get back? And we need to laser focus on that. And I think that that's a very high level. But what we're doing now around how we've got the whole idea of the life cycle, we're bringing partners in who are helping us to scale that en masse. We're expanding our solutions to focus on much more of the Cisco install base. The launch of SuccessTracks, which is a buying program that standardizes how we go to market. This is the year for customer success. And I think this is the year that we will not just land it, but we will just blow it out of the water. And I think in FY21, we'll look back and say, wow, that was a year that customers really, really saw value, even more than they've ever done in how we helped them be successful.
So we talked a lot about results. Today is a big day in the UK. It's when all of the 18-year-olds get their A-level results. But because of COVID, it's a slightly different year than in the past. What advice would you give to those young people who are going to get results today that are disappointing? They're not the grades that they wanted to get.
Don't worry. Listen, it's just one step in a very long process in your career. If it's A-level results, there are lots of different options. You can go to university, you can come and do an apprentice, you could go straight into work. So there's lots of different routes. I think that I've not seen the results yet. I don't know what the stats look like. But if you've not got what I got terrible A-level results. Honestly, I just didn't do a good job. But I got to a university, which wasn't my first choice university. It was probably the 10th choice. I ended up getting a degree in this thing called Information Systems for Business in 1995, which was actually IT, the first IT degree. I ended up going into Microsoft and having a 20-year career in technology. None of it was planned. None of it was planned at all. So just because you didn't get the results you're looking for doesn't mean that your life is over. There are tons and tons and tons of opportunities. If you want to go to university, go and find a university. There's lots of great universities out there, lots of great courses. Or you can go into an apprenticeship. You know, come into Cisco, come into Microsoft, come into IBM. We take on hundreds of degree apprentices. You can get an apprentice and a degree and get paid and get experience with Cisco. We love it. We've got 70 amazing apprentices this year. I mean, we want to have even 150 next year, hopefully. Or, quite frankly, go back a year, take a year out and actually restudy. I did that at the end of my A-levels. I didn't go to university immediately. I actually took a year out and decided I was going to go and work with my dad. It was a complete disaster. So my dad he has his own business. He's a self-made textile manufacturer in the north of England. I thought, oh, I didn't get good A-levels. I'm going to go and work for the family business. And after about 6 weeks, I was like, oh, God, I want to get to university. Oh, my word. And in the end, I went a year later. But the point is, you know, that taking that year out made me realize that I did not want to go into textile manufacturing. And I did not want to work with my dad, you know, every single day of my life. Nothing wrong with my dad, of course. He's a great guy. So, you know, there's always lots of options. Just don't panic. Take advice. Just take a deep breath. And there are lots of different ways that you can move forward.
Right. Thank you so much. Alex, before we go, imagine yourself, as you probably can more than you could have done a year ago, on a desert island. And I want you to tell me what song you would have, what book and what luxury item on your desert island.
OK, so what song? It would be the Stone Roses, This Is The One. And if you don't know who that is, anyone listening to this podcast, go and download it from Spotify and listen to it 3 or 4 times over. It's probably the best song ever written. What book? You know what? I'm a bit cheesy, actually. I just bought that new John Grisham book. It's really, really easy to read. It's not tacky. I've got lots of business books and there's lots of them. I get recommendations from lots of people and I like reading business books. But sometimes I just want to read some kind of simple fiction. I don't even know what it's called. It's not in this room. I just picked it up and started reading it a couple of days ago because I just had a bit of time. So the book for me would actually, it's not the book that's important. It's just something that helps me relax and turn off my mind. So yeah, just any simple, easy to read fiction for me, just because I want to go into a different world for a bit. And then what luxury item was that you said?
Yeah.
What looks right to me? Paddleboard, if I'm honest with you. I live in Henley on the river, and I've spent a lot of time on a paddleboard this year because we've had good weather, and I love it. You know, it's maybe not a luxury item. It costs about 300 quid, but I put my kids on one end, I put my dog on the other end, and I get a paddle, and we paddle up and down the river and swim in the river, and we have so much fun. It feels like I'm going back to, you know, when I was like a teenager again, because I used to, you know, swim in rivers up north, much colder rivers. So, if I'm stuck on a desert island, I definitely want a paddleboard so I can go for a little paddle around the sea.
Alistair, thank you so much. It's always nice having a chat to you, even though I chat to you every day. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Go and paddle on.
See you later. Take care. Soon. Stay safe. Bye.